Welcome to News Talking. This is D.G. Martin. Well, if you've ever been up to Ashe County this time of year, you'll find that half of Orange County has moved up to Ashe County. And one of the things that people up there really enjoy visiting about is the old railroad that ran from all the way up to Abingdon, Virginia, and carried timber and other products and brought things down to West Jefferson for the people down there to use. One of my buddies up there is fascinated with this railroad, and he also happens to be a fantastic artist. Stephen Shoemaker has his studio up there, and he's always been drawn to he's always been pulled to artistry about the railroad. One of my buddies and somebody who's been on this program before, Janet Pittert from Raleigh and West Jefferson, has teamed up with Steve, and they put together a book of pictures, paintings, poetry, and narrative, all centered around West Jefferson and the Mountain Railroad that they fell in love with. Steve and Janet, welcome.
Thank you. Great to be here.
DG, thank you.
It's a treat.
Thank
to
very
always
much.
A treat to be with you guys. Steve, I shouldn't say this. You're a nut about the railroad, aren't you?
The first part, you are right. I am a nut, and you've got to be a little bit nutty to do probably what I like to do. It's passion. I like your pun, pulled into this thing.
I'd said drawn into, and then I realized
you,
I was.
Well, both are apropos, I think. But it is a passion, and moving back to West Jefferson after many years of living in Charlotte, I rediscovered what was up there, what had been, and a little bit of what is going to happen in the future. So it's
This is the Virginia Creeper Railroad. Where did it get its name? Where did it get started? What did it do? What impact did it have on West Jefferson in the old days?
Well, there's lots of stories about how it got its name. I guess first and foremost is the speed at which the train moved. I dare say it didn't reach the speed of 25 or 30 miles an hour at any given point, either off the White Top Mountain coming down or the other side. Some say it was because of a vine that grew somewhere along the line. They call it the Virginia Creeper. But for myself, I had ridden that train, and I can say that it is a slow train.
It's not the train's long gone now, right?
The train's long gone. I rode the train when it was still a steamer, and so I feel like I can talk about that train. I remember as a child riding that train and reaching out the window and trying to touch the rocks along the way, and it was quite an experience. Trying to breathe with the coal dust coming back from the stack through the windows.
Was it a primarily for lumber, or was it what was the economic driver that made the railroad sustainable?
Well, the railroad originated in Johnson City. That's where it originated on its run to the mountains. It was bought by a company for the sole purpose of timbering that area. And from Johnson City to Abingdon, and it branched in Abingdon. That's where it branched off the main line and moved up towards White Top and on through the mountains and on into Ashe County. But the sole purpose was to pull timber out of that region, and they pulled a lot of timber out of that region. And once they pulled the timber out, then they had no more use for the railroad. But the people became dependent on the railroad. Thus, the transportation authorities
dependent on for transportation, for the mail. This
US
is Janet.
Mail. Uh-huh.
Janet, the mail uh-huh. came in on the train, and was did it come down from Abingdon or from someplace, or where did?
Well, it picked it up all along the way and distributed it, and they picked it up all along the way going back. But it was they were so dependent on the railroad, you could buy a ticket. At West Jefferson Station, you could buy a ticket at Todd Station for New York and make connections. That was a way out of the mountains. And if the train was out, that was it.
Well, Janet, how about you're a relative newcomer
To Ashe County.
Mm-hmm. And so what stirred up your interest in the railroad?
I was working on some stories for our state magazine, and I met Stephen along the way. Somebody suggested that he would be a good story, and I met him and saw his paintings of the Virginia Creeper and got real interested in the story behind the train and the history. I'm all a little bit of a history buff, and being able to see the realistic representation of the train that Stephen was doing, and then hearing a little bit about the stories behind it and the impact that it had on that region, I mean, it changed it forever.
What do you mean it changed it?
Well, it brought, before the train came to Ashe County and the region around there, people were virtually isolated up there. The people, you couldn't get out, and other people couldn't get in. And it brought in new people. It let people have the opportunity to go other places, to whether they wanted to leave and go work someplace else or go to a doctor somewhere else, go shopping somewhere else. So it brought in people and products and new ideas and new cultures, and just changed the whole culture and history of the people in the entire region. And it grew the town of West Jefferson. There was no West Jefferson until there was a train. And other little places along the way sprang up to accommodate the railroad. So it created towns and made boom towns and changed the world up there forever.
Well, how did people get along and get around before the train came? What, just get on a, just walk out of the mountains, or get on a horse and ride out, or wagon?
We did have roads up there. They were sparse. They were, for the most part, dirt roads. And people traveled quite well through the mountains. It was getting off the mountain. My grandfather used to tell me the tale of driving a solid rubber tire truck, chain driven, from Blowing Rock, carrying produce down to Wilkes. People could navigate the mountains, but it was a difficult thing. The train made it so much easier to get products in, to move to places. So it was exciting for everybody. In fact, I'll make this comment. West Jefferson, which is where the train finally stopped in the late 30s, that was the end of the line after they pulled the line back from Todd. West Jefferson was actually laid out as a town, and I think, if I'm not mistaken, is the only town in North Carolina that was actually planned for a town and laid out with all the alleyways, all the streets, the main street, everything in preparation for the arrival of the train.
To design, to service a train, get the products there,
yes.
Have the passenger have a good place for the passengers to get on, that kind of stuff.
Right.
Like Jack Casarda, our friend here in Chapel Hill, is plans worldwide airports to, you know, and that if you just let it organize itself, you can sometimes get yourself backed up. But if you plan it, it kind of works. So West Jefferson's a planned railroad town.
It's a planned town.
Well, let's take a quick break. We're visiting with Steve Shoemaker and Janet Pittard. We're talking about their new book. It's a book of words and a book of pictures, and you'll learn more about it after this short break. Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. I'm visiting with Stephen Shoemaker and Janet Pittard about their book, which is called Stephen Shoemaker, The Paintings and Their Stories. And you can't see these you can't see these pictures, but I told Stephen I was going to ask him about his favorite, and he said, look on the cover. Why? To tell us about, give us the history of the cover portrait, and I'll just say it's a wonderful picture in the snowy mountains of a old steam locomotive, maybe even, I guess it's coal-fired, but it could be stacking wood back there.
Prior to coal-fired, it was wood-fired trains, but this just so happened to be the last of the steam engines that ran, and it was coal-fired. The cover of the book, I was working on a large mural outside on the on the wall of one of our buildings downtown. And the spot that I chose was a place called the Cut at Devil Stairs. It's in the remote part of the county. A lot of people from this area have driven through there, maybe didn't know the name of it, but a lot of people here have driven through that area. But as I was working on the mural, a gentleman drove up and said, "Do you know the story of the area you're painting right now?" And I said, "No, I don't have a clue." And he proceeded to tell me about the tragedy that happened in 1945 when a young girl, a toddler, lost her life when the train was on its return trip from West Jefferson back home. And it really caught me off guard. And from that moment, it changed the whole feeling and the tone of that painting, that it was no longer the painting. It was more the story. And the mural that's depicted on the wall is quite a bit different than the cover of the book. But I decided I wanted to paint that train one more time and kind of immortalize that little area right there and pay my respects to the people, to the family that lost that child.
Wow.
And the train took on a whole new face. It was just a very heart-wrenching story to hear what happened and so many people that it affected within the family and also people outside that family.
Janet, you probably heard Stephen talk about this painting a lot, but in the end, you had to put together some words to accompany that picture. How'd you approach it, and what did you decide you needed to say about it?
I wanted to make sure that when we retold this story about this little toddler that had lost her life on the tracks of the Virginia Creeper, I wanted to make sure that we were respectful of the family and the memory and the grief that they had suffered during that time. And so I wanted to make sure that we told the story in a way that that they would be satisfied with, that they would be happy with. And I think that we succeeded in doing that. We tried to make sure that we conveyed what had happened without the gory
details.
Well,
tell us what happened. You can either in your own words now or read a little bit of it and share that story with us.
There was a – this is below Stikes Holler near Warrensville, and it was James and Hattie Turner's, a little modest wood frame house that overlooked the railroad tracks. And the children played on the rocks right there near where the tracks were. And in this whole area of Ashe County, the train is so integrated into people's daily lives that you just sort of take it for granted. And the noise is sort of a part of your daily life, and the whistle and the fact that the train is coming by so close to your house, within a whisper of your house, and people don't think too much about it being a big scary thing to have that train coming by your house. And so this child was apparently kind of bad for slipping off and going down there a little bit too close to the tracks and playing around. And she was playing with her siblings on the rock up above where the train went, and her mother came out, heard the first whistle, and realized the train was coming, and she went to look for the child and couldn't find her, and the other children looked around and saw that she was not there. And by the time the mother spotted the child on the tracks, she knew it was too late. She knew she wouldn't be able to reach her in time, and the train struck the child and killed her instantly. And the little girl, I don't think, ever even realized the train being so much a part of her everyday life. I don't think she ever realized the danger. I don't think she ever turned around to see it. And it was the mother relayed several apparitions that she had seen that would have, in retrospect, foretold that there was to be a tragedy there. And, you know, it's a sad story, but it tells – we wanted to make sure that people understood that even though it was a sad story, that this family had somehow survived this tragedy and had moved past their grief. And that is what the lesson is in all of this, is that you can survive terrible grief and still move on.
Well, the Stephen, the picture itself doesn't give the viewer a hint of this that I see of this sadness that's a part of the story that led you to want to make a representation of the train at this particular point.
Well, that was when I said the story changed the whole feeling about the painting on the mural. I decided to add to that mural in dedication of the loss of that little girl. And I added a teddy bear in the snow as if it had been cast away. And also a little grave marker. I visited her grave, and I put that little marker. You have to look close to find both the marker and the little teddy bear. But in the cover, if you look, there's a mile marker, milepost marker on the left. Instead of a mile number, there's an H, and that stands for Hopal. And there's also a red bird. And that's just a comforting bird and a tribute to her. The engineer who's leaning out the window is not waving to the mother. He's just letting her know that he's there and that he's aware of maybe, you know, what's happened, and he apologizes for whatever. But she's standing on the porch as it goes by. I don't relate that story to everybody. They like the picture, and sometimes we just leave it at that. If they get inquisitive and want to know, then I'll oblige them and tell them the story.
Well, thanks for sharing it with us. There are other stories, there are happier stories. You, as a boy, you had some experiences on the railroad that you've illustrated in your book. Anyone just jump out at
you? The best one would be my brother, David. David is he's also an artist, and he's give him a plug there, David. And he was quite a bit younger than I was, and he has the dubious distinction of having derailed this exact train on the back.
What do you mean he derailed it?
He derailed it. He and my cousin Johnny were playing on the tracks. They were just close to the home place, and they stacked oak blocks on the tracks, little oak blocks that had fallen down from my uncle's wood pile that he burned in a little wood stove, and they stacked them on the track. And when the train came in, it was enough to lift the front trucks off the track, and it derailed it.
My golly.
They were five and six.
Have you got a picture in there?
There's a picture of my brother riding away on a tricycle, but I don't have the picture of the derailment. I have painted that picture before, though.
Well, we'll wait for that in the second edition of this wonderful book. We're talking about the new book, Stephen Shoemaker, The Paintings and Their Stories. We're talking with the artist, Stephen Shoemaker, and with the writer, Janet Pittard, and we'll be right back after this short break. Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. I'm visiting with my guest, Stephen Shoemaker and Janet Pittard, talking about a wonderful book that they put together. It's called Stephen Shoemaker, The Paintings and the Stories. Stephen, excuse me for interrupting, but Mr. Link had photographed your railroad, the Virginia Creeper, and he was wanting to know if maybe you'd copied his pictures.
Exactly. And I told him, no, I didn't. And in fact, I had sent him one of my prints. I was so proud of the print. It was the first print. I wanted him to have a copy of it. And this was after some problems with his ex-wife, and we won't get into that. But anyway, the paintings are drawn from memory. I go on site and I take my own photographs. My wife Nancy and I made a long sojourn to Pennsylvania, and Nancy she found this train museum for us to visit. And she was adamant that we go there, even though our time was limited. She said, you never know what might be there. So we did go there, and it just so happened that a 480, which is the wheel configuration of the Virginia Creeper, they had one that was running on a stretch of track there, and it was identical to the one that ran into West Jefferson. So there was my photograph of the train, and we photographed it up and down, backwards and forwards. So all I needed was the train. I had all the background and all the information I needed along the lines since I lived there. So it was wasn't very difficult to put the two together.
So based on the visit to the museum, you found a engine that was virtually identical to the Virginia Creeper engine, and from that you could do a pretty good detail work with your
A lot of close-ups. It's a Molly, referred to as an M-type steam train.
Well, what about the mechanics? I mean, a lot of people who are maybe listening to us are not artists, but there might be some aspiring artists. What are the challenges that this kind of artwork presents to you as opposed to some of the other things that, I mean, that you've done in your long life?
Well, a little bit of it, I think, is just being crazy. I did a painting of the last hanging in Ashe County, and it was a large painting, and it got into a whole lot of work and detail. And I said, you have to be crazy to get involved in something like this. So it's a desire, I guess, to push yourself a little bit.
Well, all right, you brought it up. I wasn't going to bring up this painting of an event that people in Ashe County still talk about, this last hanging. And a lot of the talk is because of your painting is a constant reminder of this event. Tell us about that event.
Well, it was a...
What year, about what time, turn of the century?
The old courthouse had just been completed in 1904, I think. This trial and consequence of the consequently of the hanging was in 1907, but it was an African American that was hung, and he should not have, you know, been hung. It was just a sad.
What were the charges?
He had killed his cousin, and probably in self-defense. But the most poignant thing about the story is that he stood on the scaffolds and made a talk to the crowd, which was humongous at the time, about his innocence, what he did, and you know they hung him anyway.
At this point in time, I mean, even today, the African American population of Ashe County is small.
Very small, very small. We have some good people up there.
Now, what led you to? Why'd you have to memorialize this in a painting?
When I was a child, I remember reading. They rewrote the story in the old newspaper, the Skyland Post, and I remember reading it as a young person and what effect it had on my my perception of the county, the African American population there, and it stayed with me my whole life. And then moving back to West Jefferson. To depart from the train a little bit, I decided to maybe record a little bit of that history for posterity. And so I embarked on that long journey of painting that scene.
Well, Janet, you got to know this artist, and he keeps telling us that he's a little bit crazy. At what point did you say, gosh, we could make a book together?
We had talked about, we did a number of stories together for Our State magazine, and along the course of time, we talked about doing a book, and we didn't ever quite get around to doing it, and then the Ashe County Arts Council sponsored a special exhibit called More Than Words, where they paired a local artist with a local writer, and the artist was to create a painting or a sketch, and the writer was to respond to that with a narrative, poetry or prose or whatever, and then the writer was to create a narrative and present it to the artist, who would then be inspired to write or be inspired to paint or sketch a picture. And we did this exhibit together, and that sort of motivated us. It gave us a methodology for how to proceed with putting together a book. And so we decided, okay, we did that for this exhibit. We can do that in a big way for a book. And that got us started.
Well, I don't know how to say this, but there are a lot of people in Chapel Hill who have written or put together books, and they have a hard time getting them a publisher.
We were lucky. We were very lucky. McFarland Publishing Company is in Jefferson, North Carolina, right next door to West Jefferson, and they were kind enough to take an interest in this regional history stories, and they came and offered to publish it for us, and we were just extremely fortunate. We were.
Was it just? You think it was just because it was local interest, or could McFarland do the same thing for an artist around here, or an artist in?
I think they were particularly drawn to it because it was of local interest, and it became for them. It became a kind of a community project, and all of their staff at McFarland got real involved in the production of the book, and you know everybody in town and in the county was talking about the book, and the people that worked at McFarland became celebrities because they were working on the publication of it. So it was a real community event.
Has it, Stephen, has it made a difference in your life, having the book out there with your...
Having gone through the process has made a big difference. It's made me aware of how hard it is to put something like this together. And at this point, I have to say, the reason it happened is because of Janet Pittard and her professionalism that she brought to the project. If it had been left up to me, it would still be laying under my desk, hidden away somewhere. But Janet is the consummate perfectionist, and she absolutely wore me out over it. She didn't give me a chance. She didn't give me a chance to slough off or back down. She pushed this project, and when she said something needed to be done, she did it. And that's why they accepted the project, because she was so professional to the approach to this thing. In fact, the publisher said to me that he hadn't seen anybody any more professional and to have things ready than Janet.
Well, I tell you what, on that complimentary break, are y'all friends again after all this pushing around that she did?
We are still friends.
And I hope so after those.
I'm visiting with these two friends, Janet Pittard and Stephen Shoemaker, about their new book about Stephen's paintings, and the three of us will be right back. Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. I'm visiting with my guest, Stephen Shoemaker and Janet Pittard, talking about a wonderful book that they put together. It's called Stephen Shoemaker, The Paintings and the Stories. It's focused around West Jefferson, North Carolina. That's in Ashe County, where I think half the population of Chapel Hill goes to in the summer. And the book is crowded with wonderful paintings and pictures. And we've only talked about two or three of them, and I said, "Well, all right, this last time we got together, what's your favorite? What's the one that we haven't talked about that's your favorite, Janet?"
One of the ones that both of us really like is actually a picture of Pappy Brown and Stephen. That's Stephen's grandfather, Pappy Brown, and it's drawn in pencil from a photograph, and it was done a long time ago, but it shows Stephen holding his grandfather's hand, walking up to the back porch where of his grandparents' house. And we did a story about called Pappy and Me that talks about the relationship between Stephen and his father. And it just, I don't know, it's very poignant. And we always, when we do a reading, we usually try to read a little piece from it. There's a two stories that actually relate to Pappy Brown. One is called Pappy's Garden, and one is called Pappy and Me. But
read a little bit of one of those.
This is about, the story talks about all the adventures that Stephen has with his grandfather, but it ends with talking about Pappy's garden that he has. And it says, "Pappy grows mustard greens, beets, radishes, and strawberries too. He has a fine walnut tree, an apple tree, a couple of cherry trees, and currant bushes grow by the fence next to the house. As Pappy gets older, though, his garden gets smaller. It is a gradual thing at first, just a few rows less here and there, and then it is no more. The house is gone now, saved only in memories and old photographs and these two paintings in the book. No children hunt Easter eggs on the lawn or pester older folks with questions about everything under the sun, but an apple tree and a walnut tree are still there, lone remnants of Pappy's garden. My brother David and I stopped by there a while back and ate a couple of apples off that apple tree. We didn't say much to each other, just munched our apples and remembered a garden a long time ago and the man who tended it.
Janet, you got a nice poem about this, about this picture, and I'm just going to read part of it. It's called "The Future Holds the Past." One's life is just beginning. One's almost at an end. One races to the future. One holds to the past. One wants to be older and bigger. One wants to be younger and stronger. One longs for his freedom. One fights to keep his. One seeks wisdom. One imparts it. One laughs at life. One laughs in spite of it. One knows the joy of surprise. One knows the value of patience. One is fearless. One has conquered fear. One embraces change. One has seen too much of it. One loves with abandon, and one simply loves. A beautiful picture inspired by Stephen's relationship with his Pappy and the accompanying paintings. Well, guys, this has just been a great visit for me. But let's leave the book for just a minute. And a lot of Orange County people, like Chapel Hill people, go up to Ashe County. What is it about Ashe County that draws them there? I would say, one is art. And, Ben Long's murals are up there. You got a wonderful painting school up there.
Yes, we have Florence Thomas Art School there that is a great place for people to come and take art classes. We have art galleries all up and down the street and gallery crawls and a very active arts council. I have just fallen in love with Ashe County, and we went up there and I did a few stories and we bought a house up there and hope to live up there full-time one of these days soon.
Well, I think we can't pass without saying that one of the things you want to do on one of the main streets is to stop by and say hello to Stephen Shoemaker and
absolutely
buy a print or original artwork, or just say hello. Talk about the business of art right now, particularly during the downtimes, is tough.
It's very tough. I love what I do, so if I can get along, as we say, I'm fine.
Where can you make money? And for a long time, prints were really popular, but now somebody told me that people are more interested in original artwork and having one of. Is that your experience?
We still have a population that can't afford originals, and that's why I think the train did so well, because it was affordable. If they couldn't afford it, you give them one, but you wanted them to have a piece of that Ashe County history. However they feel about art, I've been amazed at the interest, though, in the train. Even though the train is such a small thing that I paint, the interest and the memories that train brought back, just to have some sort of visual hanging on the wall. It doesn't necessarily have to be anything more than just that print.
It's almost like the train is a ghost now. The train is, there's no whistle, there's no train coming through. The only remnant that I remember up there is the remnant of the old passenger platform there.
We still have the depot there. Part of the grade is still visible, a trestle or two, but it's long gone. But the memory lasts, and a lot of people, a lot of musicians pay tribute to it. A lot of songs have been written about the old Virginia Creeper. So it's still much alive.
Well, thanks for sharing your memories through your paintings, and Janet through your words, and for coming down to Chapel Hill to share it with us today. I've been visiting with Stephen Shoemaker and Janet Pittard. We've been talking about the new book, Stephen Shoemaker, The Paintings and Their Stories. Thanks to them. Thanks to you for listening. This is D.G. Martin, and I'll be back here before you know it.